Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest in the first half hour is John McMurtry. John has been on many, many times. We will focus on the program on the issues really that are making headlines, the ones that should make the right headlines. They make the wrong headlines in what I call the scoundrel media, and I use that term very, very pronouncedly, let me say. These people really are scoundrels. They proliferate lies. They bury the truth. They promote war. They abhor peace. It goes on and on and on. The big issue of the day is Ukraine. Let me just mention briefly, I've been writing daily on Ukraine. I've certainly talked about it enough on this program. I will in future programs because this issue is not going away. It just began. The Ukraine story just began, and I fear that the worst may be yet. Crimea today. Yesterday was the Ides of March. I want to mention that briefly a little bit more. But let me just mention the awaited Crimean referendum voting is going on today. If I have my time in Crimea right, the polls will remain open for, I believe, another 1 hour. I may have that wrong. They may have been closing about now, but they're pretty close to getting closing. And by noon, they were open at 8 a.m. this morning. They were to close at 8 p.m. Crimean time. And by noon Crimean time, 4 hours into the voting, over 44% of Crimeans had come out to vote. The reports I got, the independent ones, cited extraordinary turnout. Crimeans want to vote. And what do they want to vote for? Polls overwhelmingly say they want their sovereignty respected. They want independence. They want to join Russia. They want no part of the fascist, putschist regime in Kiev, the one that Washington supports, the neo-Nazi bunch, the ones I call mob rule. And let me just briefly go back to the Ides of March, which was yesterday. I mentioned this on another program. Beware the Ides of March. Darn right, beware the Ides of March. In 1933, Hitler came to power. 1936, he seized the Rhineland. 1937, the Guernica massacre in Spain. 1938, the Anschluss with Austria. Probably pronounced that wrong. Goes on and on. 1999, John, NATO, U.S.-led NATO's war on Yugoslavia. In 78 days of ferocious bombing on Serbia and Kosovo, the power of the munitions dropped, led by General Wesley Clark.
Which the chief, one of the chief prosecutors of the U.S. at the Nuremberg trial said was that if that wasn't a war crime, nothing he would recognize was a war crime.
It was a war crime. John, the power of the munitions dropped in 78 days exceeded the power of what at least America dropped on Europe in World War II. Astonishing. A couple more things.
Steve,
2003, March, Iran, George Bush's war on Iran, Operation Iraqi Freedom, and one more. One more. Well, maybe the worst yet to come. March of 2011, Operation Odyssey Dawn, Obama's war on Libya. All wars of aggression, all illegal acts. This is America's agenda. It's following the same script as Hitler, John.
Perhaps even in a sense worse, Steve. I think that the way of understanding, you know, when we look at what happened ever since 2001 in particular, since the 9/11 hoax, that they've had a carte blanche right to invade anybody they please. And they said in 2001, Wolfowitz said it, and Wesley Clark put it in his memoirs, we're going to destroy societies. We're going to take out Iraq. We're going to take out Afghanistan. We're going to take out Somalia. We're going to take out Libya. We're going to take out Syria. We're going to take out Sudan. Syria being the latest to actually fulfill that promise that they were going to destroy. Now, they didn't put the words in those words, but they were going to take out the states. But in fact, what really is at work here is a project to destroy societies themselves. What they do in every case is start a civil war. They do it through special forces going in. They violate international law throughout. They always reverse project onto whoever is being attacked that they're the real enemy, that they're the ones that are against the law, they're the ones that are appealing to armed force. They always have very major natural resources, and in this way it's usually oil, but in this case we're having a very different kind of natural resource that's huge. you wonder, well, what does Ukraine really have? Well, to begin with, it has the breadbasket of all of that area. It is the breadbasket. It is the third biggest or second biggest exporter of all grains, of corn, of maize, and so forth. It is a huge breadbasket. That is what's going shorter in the world now than oil. And so we're after the breadbasket, and so is the EU. Why? Because the breadbasket will provide perfect collateral to put them into debt servitude. So this is, the banks want a hold of it. Well, Russia was screwing things up by giving them $12 billion. They're going to charge, they're going to give $2 or $3 billion and keep them in forever debt chains, and we're going to have a Greece very soon under this. And they've already taken all the way up to Russia's borders. So we have very big interests here, not only military, huge, right up to Russia's borders. This is like 1991, now we're 2014. We go the whole distance. And they have in mind going after the rest of Russia, too. They want to split Russia up, and if they succeed with this, they're going to, and of course, that's what Putin recognizes, and that's why he's holding on to. I mean, they keep saying Ukrainian territory, this is against international law. It has never been part of Ukrainian territory, except when the Soviet Union, the hated Soviet Union, by administrative decree, made it part of the Soviet Union. Everybody hates the Soviet Union. Everybody thinks everything it does is illegal, etc. But 55%, even larger than in Russia, want to be, of the whole of Ukraine, want to be back, thought things were much better as part of the Soviet republics. And so with the media, all you get, the key, this scoundrel media, everything you say is true. But as you observe it, the one key to everything is point of view. Always take the point of view of it, always the U.S. You know, the same thing that happens in the States happens in, with the States' allies. So the same thing happens even in public broadcasting up here. Only report the side that the U.S. says. Only report people inside Ukraine who are for the putsch. Only never ever report what the reasons are for holding on to Crimea. Never report that it's the traditional territory of Russia and has been for hundreds of years, and it was only, you know, was won from the war with the Ottoman Turks. Just through your point of view, will you only ever discuss what it is appearing to that people are on our side. And all you have to do is do that, and then you can report every crank or fascist, indeed, and of course the fascists have been reported. This is a fascist cabinet. Most of their people have ties to fascism right back to the 30s, where they're still talking about the Jewish filth and so forth. And you may say, well, this sort of throws, as I certainly thought, this is going to throw a division into the whole take of the destroying of the society. Why do they want to destroy the society? Because it has no defenses left to defend its resources. It has no defenses left to defend its markets, anything at all, its people. It can be just looted at will. So this is why I use the cancer diagnosis, because it satisfies the movement of a cancer perfectly. It doesn't just, like an imperialist thing, it doesn't just want to hold the host that it's attacking in order to subjugate it to a form of exploitation that keeps the country intact, as say Britain did, in order to, along with their rules, in order to produce something. No, they want to destroy the whole society itself as a society. Why? Because maybe the U.S. itself has never really developed into a society. That's a deep, deep psychopathic streak, I think, that is at work here. So the major aim is destroy the societies, always. And then always do it through, you know, begins with the covert forces. It even begin, you know, here they were shooting their own people. That is the right wing, the Pravi Sektor, and their people. They had the rifles, the sniper rifles, to shoot people and then blame. I mean, we know this, that they had those rifles, and then they blame it on the administration, the same way as they blamed, you know, chemical weapons on Syria, is they do it themselves. The whole objective is destroy the society. Doesn't matter which country.
False flag, would that be the way to describe it? Of course, absolutely. To me, the twin objectives of the Ukraine story, Ukraine of all of the former Soviet republics, 16 in all, I believe, including Russia, Ukraine, the most important one after Russia, and the game is to co-opt them all, the so-called Commonwealth of Independent States, the Soviet republics, the Warsaw Pact countries, also besides the republics, Hungary, Poland, Czechoslovakia, now Slovakia, and the Czech Republic, co-opt these under the NATO, to make them all pro-Western, co-opt them in the NATO, literally surround, go encroach right up to Russia's borders, put U.S. bases on Russia's borders with long-range nuclear-armed missiles targeting Russia's heartland. So the name of the game to me, John, on the one hand is rape and pillage these former republics and the Warsaw Pact countries, which is exactly what's happened. And the other one is isolate Russia and China, John. Isolate them, weaken them. Try to eliminate them as rivals without going to war. I can't imagine why America would want to go to war with either one of those countries.
Well, they aren't going to go. My prediction is they wouldn't. You know, I've predicted again and again that they're not going to go to war. They just use this to destroy the society, to get it so wound up and so beleaguered with sanctions and so forth, which they're going to run again here as they did with Iran. I mean, of course, that's one of the countries that they're after. And they'll never stop. But what's the really sinister part is that it's not just for positive interests of getting resources and so forth. It is to destroy the society so you can loot a defenseless society as you please through the three main prongs that we've already discussed, but it's worthwhile, as you've emphasized, military. This is huge military. This is 1991 objective, now going all the distance, now going right to Russia's border, and now after Russia's border, they're going to go inside Russia, and they're going to, you know, with the covert forces and the propaganda that never stops, continuous defamation of everything going on, and then the mob here just gets all agitated, and so finally, you know, the freedom wins. That means the society is destroyed. This is not going to stop. This also has huge banking interests in it, because they're running out of Europe. You know, they've broken those societies that are in forever debt servitude. They did the same in Latin America. Latin America got into public banking. The banks are very much into this, and they've got a huge collateral in the breadbasket of the world. So you have big agriculture as well. So those three here in Iraq, military, huge, big agriculture, which is industrial agriculture, just industrialized the whole system. And since it's got its veins open, we've destroyed the society through civil war. I mean, that's the method that's used again and again. And then the banks can be at will, just extract from them, bleed them dry. And
exactly,
even the EU pro-brokered peace deal itself, which was to let, you know, they had a peace deal that was in February saying that the presidency must be left intact. The presidency must, if there's going to be any change of the presidency, it must revert to the next one in order, which would be the prime minister. And then if not the prime minister, it reverts to the speaker, you know, the way we have in our constitutions. At least Canada has similar sorts of things, and the U.S. does too. The EU just gave up on their own broker peace deal as soon as the fascists started throwing Molotov cocktails. They were mass producing Molotov cocktails, as well as carrying rifles and pointed sticks, but they were throwing Molotov cocktails and explosions continuously, and even then they were given into. They were given in to you. We won't ban the demonstrations. We won't ban the helmets and the visors and the ski masks and the rest of it. And that they just redoubled, because it was a fascist underground being used like the brown shirts were used by the Nazis in the 30s.
I've been wondering when Putin would finally draw his red line, and I mentioned that in a number of articles that I've written. I think he partly drew a red line on Syria, three vetoes of U.S.-sponsored resolutions.
Yes.
There would have been the same thing as what happened to Libya, open sesames to start the NATO bombing the country. He thwarted those. I think Ukraine is his real red line. He knows that, I don't have to explain the dirty story that to Putin, he could explain it to me much better. He knows that he is the target that America is aiming at, and if he doesn't stop America on Ukraine, then he's literally going to be surrounded. He'll be much weaker than he is now, and he needs to take a stand at some point. I think he's taking a stand now, John.
Yeah, and, you know, Sevastopol, I haven't mentioned this, and it's a huge, like, this is the major port for the export of all Ukraine's grain. It's a major exporting port in the Crimea. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But it's a home of the Black Sea.
It's the number one port in the Black Sea.
Oh,
that's where all their grain has to go through. Yes, a huge interest. The old Crimea, as I said, has never been part of, never in history has been part of Ukraine or the Ukrainian people. Yeah, only by the gift of the Soviet Union in 1954 did it even have this pretense.
Oh, Nikita, what you did. Nikita Khrushchev. 1954 a week, but he thought at the time that Ukraine would never become an independent republic, so he thought, Crimea is attached to Ukraine, so he handed it to them. A very foolish move.
Yes, you never, never do a good thing. You'll get killed for it by the other side, this side. And then, of course, Russia's $12 billion are going to loan them, and the 25% price off for all their gas, which they're completely energy dependent. They're just going to be suckered into big oil and the banks and the rest of it so badly. In fact, their prime minister, their president, the appointed president is a graduate. He has his PhD from a sort of a no-name banking institute.
You're talking about Yatsenyuk. He's also a former central banker.
He has a PhD from a banking institute, and he's already barking about how the people are going to be against him because he's going to put them through an austerity program they've never seen before. He's already, he's just a programmed Wall Street type banker, only Bush League educated, and interestingly Jewish. But they'll get rid of the brown shirts, and he's got his people, but the brown shirts must be consulted. They've been told you have to consult with them four times a week. The Janet Newland, or whatever her name is, that is the Secretary of State, Under Secretary of State, and then the ambassadors, they've been part of that too. They knew it, of course that they were already discussing when the demonstrators started, which they poured billions in to make happen. They were already discussing who was going to be the replacement government. So the evidence is all over the walls about what this is. Just yet one more thing. Let's destroy another society.
Well, indeed so. And Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State for Eurasian and European Affairs, that's pretty close. The infamous telephone call with the U.S. ambassador in Kiev. I mean, she called him Yats. He's the Washington favorite. A smiling face.
Well, you ought to see his face, though. He looks like a rodent. I mean, who he is.
Well, he could put a whole sentence together, unlike George Bush. And so he looked like the right guy. I mean, these other crazies, John, the lunatic fringe, the so-called right sector, and this guy, Yarosh, Russia has an international warrant out for his arrest. I mean, the guy should be arrested. And the so-called Swoboda Party, a neo-Nazi, an absolutely overt neo-Nazi party, complete with the insignias, the swastikas,
the
iron crosses, the whole schmear.
Just pouring anti-Semitism out of their mouths, right in the streets,
Well, this guy Yarosh, he says, he lives, quote, to kill Jews and Russians till I die.
Yeah.
Imagine
that.
Can you imagine that?
I mean, the things he said, right back to Bandera, which was allied with the Nazis. Yes. They worship him, and they use Jews. This is another one of his quotes. Jews are hostile to us and must be exterminated in this struggle, and begin with destroying their intelligentsia.
Oh, indeed. So, John, we have a short program
today. Yeah, we've got to go on to very much similar in the pattern of attack.
Oh, I hope the next time I get you on, I'll be back to my one-hour format with one guest, which is absolutely what I prefer. I mean, the time just goes by so fast. Let's switch over to Venezuela, because Venezuela is a slightly low-level version of what's been happening in Ukraine. And I'll emphasize one more time before jumping over to Venezuela, the Ukraine story just began. It just began. It didn't end. But we see violence in Venezuela. I put out a new article on it this morning. 30 people have already been killed in Venezuela. The same deal. Fascist extremists are being armed. They're shooting innocent people in the streets, shooting police. Same dirty game going on. And the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, is blamed for the crimes these people have committed.
Yeah, just like they did in Ukraine.
Just like Ukraine. Exactly
or,
the same thing.
Or, you know, anywhere else you want to go, 9/11 being the sort of seed core of the whole thing.
Yes. John, let me
well, the same thing, you know. John, I mean, we destabilize a country that has natural resources we want, as well as, you know, all the rest, the military, the banking, and so forth. But this is a country that was doing much better than Ukraine. Ukraine, you know, lost 60%. That's why the majority of the people are for joining Russia and Ukraine itself, according to the polls that have been done. We're just going to destabilize a democratically elected government. It's almost always that. Doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. We're going to destabilize and we're going to do it with covert forces. We did it in 2002. The people rose up against us and grew up. We're not going to stop. We're just going to keep all those people who did that in 2002 are still alive and well. In fact, Capriles was one of them. Capriles was involved with the assassination of the chief prosecutor of the coup people. So, I mean, what you basically have is when anybody steps in to stop, as Putin has tried to step in and stop what's going on in Ukraine, the president Maduro himself of Venezuela, and of course Chavez before him, anytime they try to stop what's going on, we get howls of crocodile howls about repressing freedom and individual speech. The guy who, Lopez, who's leading the streets and so forth, is a very rich man, and he is part of the planning of the whole 2002 coup. Somehow those two coup leaders have got off because you just say as soon as somebody's arrested, you never tell the story. The press only selects what's going to confirm what the, you know, what the destroying the society project is. They're just going to report that. This guy's made to look like a liberation fighter until you realize what his background is and where, you know, he stems right back to 2002. The media do the global media defamation of everything Maduro does and, you know, this is socialist, this is terrible, this is against human rights, and the covert first forces are encouraged by this. The people join. It's very easy to organize a mob, by the way. I mean, I have been in the street demonstrations in Paris and in London, which have been called, you know, I mean, the biggest in history there, and I've watched just how easy it is to organize, and not that I was doing that, but just, boy, you know, even the nicest people can be turned very ugly quickly if you have leadership spotted around. Anyway, this is a very old art that they do, the covert forces, and then you have the street violence, and then you have continuous street violence. I think they're letting in a channel of people from Colombia, dope dealers. They've also letting in American covert forces. They've already arrested a few of them, but of course they're disguised in a way that it's difficult to get their, you know, the way they do, with cloak and dagger. And then you have demonstrations paid for. Demonstrations are bribed. I mean, 20 million went into those demonstrations just to bribe people and give them equipment to do it in Ukraine. And the same thing is going on in Venezuela for longer. And then, you know, if there's an election, then you flood funds into it. But even before the election, you have things like the National Endowment for Democracy or USAID. All of those are covers for covert activities. And then you go around saying you're bellowing freedom and that's all you're interested in democracy and the people must not be repressed. And it works. Reverse projection, as always, you know, is always the technique of dealing with the propaganda. Just project onto them what you're doing yourself as the reason for attacking them. And never let go of that line. That's always the line. Meanwhile, I don't know whether you know this, but there's a great big over $1 billion Exxon lawsuit going on there.
and, you know, to extract money out because of the oil, because one, I mean, Venezuela's big crime is that it sets such a good example. It has public banking, it has progressive taxation, these are the things that work. It has taken control over its natural resources, oil, and that's the hugest thing. And then it's reduced poverty, absolute poverty by 70%, poverty itself by over 50%. It's really succeeded. It's put national, you know, Bolivarian education and health centers all across the country. We have, in short, a tremendous example that has led. It's led Uruguay, you might even say Brazil and Ecuador and Bolivia. All these countries have turned. Paraguay, now there's coups there. There's a coup in Paraguay. There was also a coup in Honduras, U.S.-arranged coups to turn it around. And they're still trying to do it to the country that started it all in 1998 and turned those countries around, and maybe the most important liberation movement in Latin American history, I would say it is.
Oh, indeed, John. I want to stress one thing before we finish our segment very shortly. Venezuela, again, Venezuela is a mini version of what did go on and continues to go on in Ukraine. But Venezuela is not Ukraine. There were legitimate grievances, serious grievances against the Ukrainian government. Had I lived there, I would have been very, very angry. I would have wanted something better.
Because they are used to crooks taking over from other crooks.
Well, the key
That's
thing
Putin
in Venezuela, John,
acknowledging
Venezuela is not Ukraine.
No,
it's
the
polar opposite Ukraine. The vast majority of Venezuelans support the Bolivarian system. Call it Bolivarianism, call it Chavismo, call it social justice. As you said,
yeah.
John, poverty hugely reduced.
Well, I call it collective life capital.
Oh, indeed so.
Yeah.
Indeed so. Why would these people, why would Venezuelans want to give up what they never had before, maybe since the days of Bolivar in the 19th century, briefly, until the scourge of Western imperialism destroyed it all? Is this what they want again? They absolutely do not. And throughout the country, oh, I believe maybe several hundred municipalities, only 18 municipalities
yeah.
have this kind of violence. And
yeah.
where is it taking place?
Yeah, the rich.
In the well-off communities,
yeah.
indeed, John, middle class, upper middle class, wealthy communities, radicalized rich kids that don't want the poor
but
kids to share
you know,
what
we,
they
we
have.
We can go further back. It's what they did in Chile. That's how they started
indeed.
In Chile. They're
indeed.
Doing the same program, which was happening just as the Vietnam War. They got defeated in the Vietnam War. No sooner were the planes out of there than they were pulling off the Chile coup with a new method. Go for places with resources we can use nearby and start it with covert forces making protests and, the wolf going crazy about the fact that we have an actual social justice movement here that's working, isn't just rhetoric, with the marvelous Allende in charge, the peaceful Allende. This program has been run again and again, only there they sort of... Well, they depended more on native forces there in Pinochet, but of course the army itself is always an adjunct of the U.S. military. And they, banging their pots and pans and the rest of it, that's how it started. And they're trying to, we didn't do it in 2002, we'll do it now.
Indeed, John, I hate to interrupt you, we need to break.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, I wish we had the second half of the program to continue with. But as I said before, I hope the next time I get you on, we'll be back to the full hour. And you and I both know the Ukraine story isn't going away. I don't think the Venezuelan story is going away either, but I expect a bright ending to the Venezuelan story. The Ukraine story, I fear the worst, John. Many, many thanks, John. I look forward to getting you back.
My pleasure, Steve. Bye for now.
Denny Rancourt. Denny has been on many times, and we've talked about how the University of Ottawa has persecuted him mercilessly. Why? For supporting right over wrong. They wrongfully accused him of bad pedagogic practices. Well, Denny's pedagogic practices were some of the best around. His students absolutely loved him. It's been a while, but I wrote several times about Denny and the kind of professor he was, professor of physics, distinguished world figure in his field, also an environmental expert. His classroom techniques were marvelous. He believes the importance of teaching is to feature learning. The issue of, you know, getting kids to regurgitate back what they hear in class, what they read in books, that's not the essence of teaching. Certainly has nothing to do with learning. You know, you just spill it back on an exam and then forget about it and go to the next stuff that you learn, spill it back again and keep forgetting it. Well, Denny's pedagogic method was really teaching kids how to learn and benefit from what they learn. And it, again, I repeat, his students loved him. I never had a teacher like that. I had some good ones, but never one like Denny. I wasn't a physics person. I wasn't a science person. But if I had been, I would have loved to have had a professor like Denny. I never was fortunate enough to do it. I had a few good ones in other fields, but they didn't teach this way. Denny was also targeted for supporting the rights of Palestinians, an issue very, very important to me. He supported their rights. He believed that they matter. And he was pilloried because Canada, hard to believe, is literally more pro-Israeli than America even is. It's hard to imagine. And the president of the University of Ottawa, Alan Rock, a former Canadian official, UN ambassador, don't recall whether he had any other government post, but I call him what he is. He's a fascist. He's a fascist. He supports right over wrong, and he vilified Denny. He also got involved in a lawsuit against him, and Denny has been fighting a valiant struggle to get out from under the tremendous bills that he's piled up. Tremendous bills. The tremendous hardship. No Denny yet? Oh, my goodness. We'll keep trying to get Denny. Let me do this. He can discuss his situation much better than I can, and he sent me some information on the latest about it. But again, he's living the story, the ordeal that he's going through, and I really want him to be the one to discuss it, not I. I won't do him justice. I'm surprised that we haven't gotten him on yet. Let's keep trying to get him because he knows full. We exchange emails, about an hour before airtime, so he very well knows what's going on. Keep trying. We've got to be able to get him on or he's going to miss the whole program. Unless he mistook the time. We usually get my guests on top of the hour. I told Denny, John was on top of the hour. I told Denny he'd be on bottom of the hour. Possibly he mistook the fact that I said bottom of the hour. If that's the case, I'm going to lose Denny entirely. Let me go back to the Ukraine story while we're waiting for Denny. Again, it's a very, very major thing for me. And my publisher, which is Clarity Press, asked me to serve as editor for a forthcoming book on Ukraine. And it's called Flashpoint on Ukraine. U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III. I'm not suggesting it'll happen. I'm not saying it will. But the risk is huge. Who thought World War I would erupt? Who thought World War II? They did. Is it out of the question that we couldn't have World War III? I don't think so. Things happen. Events lead to other events. They spin out of control. It's a very, very dangerous situation. It's volatile. Anything can happen. The risk that I think is very, very real, and if I had to pick one I would call likely, it would be civil war in Ukraine. You've got a split population. You've got a majority who are Ukrainians. You've got a very substantial minority who are Russian-speaking. They're mostly in eastern Ukraine, where the industry is. I believe the rich agricultural land is mostly in the west, but the industry is in the east. You also got Russian speakers in the western part of the country. The ones who haven't awakened to the horrors that have gone on and what they face going forward will soon enough learn the plan for Ukraine will harm them greatly. As bad as things were under the Yanukovych government, and by the way, he was elected president in 2004, and the U.S. planned first Orange Revolution, rousted him lawlessly. It did it by getting a manipulated Supreme Court to call his election illegal. There was nothing illegal about it. It was a perfectly legitimate election. Even the courts can be co-opted. Even the Supreme Court can go in the tank for for power. They're paid off. You're intimidated. The dirty game. Lots of strands to the dirty game. So he was eliminated. Some of the people involved in the current coup took power, including a woman with aspirations to become president, Yulia Tymoshenko. The names, I must say, drive me a little crazy. I prefer Smith, Jones, Cohen, and and Katz. They're a lot easier to remember. But some of the names, they can easily be tongue twisters. The ones I repeat often enough, I remember easily. Tymoshenko, I've written a fair amount about her. She is a billionaire crook. She was in prison for embezzlement and, I think, severe abuse of power. Indeed. I mean, she stole hundreds of millions of dollars, and she only got 7 years in prison. My goodness, I think young people in America or anywhere around the world would probably give up 7 years of their life if they could pocket hundreds of millions of dollars to spending 10 years in prison. I'm sorry, 7 years in prison. I mean, it wouldn't be a very pleasant experience, but think of the benefits you'd have when you came out. You certainly wouldn't have to worry about anything. Anyway, this is what this woman is. She wants to be president. Her popularity is marginal. Whether she could make it or not, I don't know. And the key isn't what she wants. It's what Washington wants, because everything that's gone on in Ukraine, everything was manipulated in Washington. Obama bears full responsibility. Rogue EU partners share it. Britain, France, Germany, they're the key players. Some of the other EU countries. The plan for Ukraine, as far as they're concerned, well, of course, target is Russia, NATO bases, nuclear missiles on Russia's borders, U.S. bases, other NATO bases, and the economic side. Raping and pillaging another country, debt entrapment through the IMF, exploiting the people, stealing the country's resources. This is the same dirty game that's gone on in one country after another. Former Soviet republics, Warsaw Pact countries, people impoverished, absolute human misery. That's what their lives are transformed into. That's what the Ukrainians can expect. Again, as bad as things were under Yanukovych, and he was reelected democratically in 2010, with his reelection campaign that won't happen now, scheduled for, I believe it was February 2015, he struck an agreement with the other side that was brokered also with a few EU prime ministers. But it was brokered with people from the opposition who seized power. There was a Polish prime minister involved. I think Germany was involved. There might have been one other Western official involved. And the elements of the so-called opposition group, they were involved. The agreement was struck on the 21st of February. Within 24 hours... Well, Yanukovych gave up plenty. I wrote an article calling what he did unconditional surrender. I was furious at what he did. He moved up the election to late 2014. He agreed to go back to the old, I believe, 1994 Constitution. My God, I mean, there ought to be a process if you want to change the Constitution. President shouldn't have the right to say, okay, we'll scrub the Constitution. We'll go back to the one we had. My math is bad. Was it 2004, or 10 years ago to 2014. That's easy math. Agreed to scrub the Constitution. The other side wanted the old Constitution. He agreed to it. He agreed to a national unity government. Everybody represented. Nobody left out. So everybody has their say. And then there would be a new election coming up at the end of this year. And Ukrainians could vote on exactly what they wanted. They could throw the old bums out. They could bring in new bums. They could do anything they wanted. And the other side agreed. And then what did they do? Within 24 hours, they spurned it. They walked away. They staged a coup d'etat. They took over the government. Western leaders, Obama, David Cameron in Britain, Francois Hollande in France, Angela Merkel in Germany, they cheerled a fascist coup led by radical extremists. I mean, the worst kind of bunch you could imagine. you heard what John McMurtry said about them, really a radicalized bunch of neo-Nazis with a mixture of people who are a little bit less to the right of center than they are, but they're all right-wing hardliners. They all mean to rape and pillage Ukraine. They all mean to exploit the Ukrainian people. They all mean to get the government dead and trapped. And they did something straight away after taking power, within a day or two or three. They cut pensioners' benefits, $160 a month in dollars, in half. $160 a month isn't nearly enough for these people, poor people, to live on. So instead of $160 a month, they've now got $80 a month. Just imagine what they're going to do. Can they put enough food on the table? Can they pay medical bills? Their families are grown up, so they don't have to worry about putting kids through school. They just have to worry about surviving. It's a deplorable situation. That's what the other side wants. That's what the West supports. And they claim. I'm just waiting for Obama to call these people freedom fighters. Well, Ronald Reagan did that for the Contras in Nicaragua. And he called what is called the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, what we call the Taliban today, that America has gone to war, the longest war in U.S. history, against them, 2001 to 2014. My goodness. Indeed, the longest war in U.S. history, spending trillions of dollars. Don't expect a sensible accounting of it. Trillions of dollars throw the Iraq war in. It certainly hasn't ended. People are dying every day. Dozens of people dying every day. And the Afghan war rages. Situation in Libya, the war rages. Dozens of people dying every day. Ever hear any reports about this in the media? I don't hear much of anything about Afghanistan, and everybody knows that tens of thousands of U.S. troops are there fighting a daily battle. The drone attacks, the ground attacks, don't hear a thing about it. Ukraine is different, but it could erupt into a similar situation. Oh, I left out Syria. Obama's war in Syria. It's a proxy war. But I'm doing an article today where I'll cite some people from one of the most extremist right-wing organizations in America, the successor to the Project for the New American Century, PNAC, literally about as strong a warmongering organization that I ever remember in America, and their modern-day incarnation is called the Foreign Policy Institute. PNAC, the name PNAC was so infamous that they ducked out of it, they ended the name, and they substituted the Foreign Policy Institute. I've written about them a number of times. Or they have a Syria-bashing article that they put out with two of their people. They want to scrap Obama's program. They call it too moderate. Maybe 150,000 people have been murdered in Syria. Maybe nobody knows how many people have been murdered. It could be 150,000, could be 250,000. Syria is a country of about 27, 28 million people. Half the country is displaced, roughly. I may be slightly off in that percentage, but let's call it half the country. I think it's, I wrote about it some time ago, and I think the figure I used was 9 million. But the numbers mount on a daily basis. It could be 12 million now, could be 13 million now. It's a horrendous number. They're mostly internally displaced. Many of them are externally displaced in neighboring countries, in Iraq, in Jordan. They're suffering hugely. There's nothing that they need that they have. Suffering hugely. Who knows how many people have died in the camps? Nobody knows. Before this thing ends, 500,000 or more could die. Maybe 1 million. That's how bad things are. It's Obama's war. It was planned long before he took office. He picked up the baton. He launched it. And what the Foreign Policy Institute wants is to step up the campaign, take off the gloves. My God, I mean, the gloves came off right at the start. They think Obama hasn't been tough enough. They want direct U.S. intervention, rather than a proxy war. They want bombs away. They want Obama to do to Syria what he did to Libya, ravage and destroy the country, U.S.-led NATO. It could either be U.S.-led NATO in Syria. It could be America by itself. But it wants a full-out bombing campaign on Syria to murder that many more tens of thousands of people, to do that much more harm, to cause that much more misery. And I'm writing about it in an article that I'll finish later today. The same thing could happen in Ukraine. I don't think this is the plan, but if a civil war erupts, and I think the odds are very strong that it may, because when the Russian-speaking Ukrainians especially, maybe many other Ukrainians as well, discover how they were cheated, how they were lied to, how they were had, they may decide they simply won't tolerate this fascist bunch of thugs that are running their country and making their lives immeasurably worse than they ever were under Yanukovych. And they may rebel. And if they rebel, we could have open conflict. If there's open conflict, civil war, that's what it would be. You're going to see intervention. You're going to see intervention from the West. And if Russia, as I believe, has drawn a red line in Ukraine, you could see intervention by Russia. So on the one hand, you could see a civil war erupt. And just like World War I, that's the best example. You had an event. You had a conflict between two parties. You had an ally of one jump in. You had an ally of the other jump in on the other side. And on, back and forth, until a whole array of countries on both sides were at war. 25 million people or so were killed. An entire generation of youth was destroyed. That war only lasted 4 years. It was one my dad was in. He never talked about it. He came back. Never talked about it. I never pressed him. Maybe what he saw, what he was involved with, unnerved him. He never wanted to say a thing about it. And the only connection I saw between him and the war was a pistol that he kept in his desk, unloaded. Came from that era. I don't know whether it was a U.S. one or a foreign one, but I saw it a number of times. I held it in my hand. He never would keep it loaded. He never wanted it used. It was a souvenir of the war, but he kept it. He never took it out and showed it to us. Well, he would open the drawer if I happened to be near him. I spotted it a couple of times, but it never came up in conversation. I guess he just buried his experience from the war, and I can understand that. It was a horrible war, only exceeded by the second one. And if there's a third one, the first two will seem like garden parties compared to a third world war, which is the reason for the book. The book that we're planning on Ukraine, I have a name for an aim for the book. I would like it to be the definitive independent account on what's really going on in Ukraine, why it matters, and what may follow. And I must say, I've only had this project for around a week or so, maybe a little over a week. And I've enlisted some extraordinary contributors. I got another one today. I won't name them on this program. I'll cover content more than the contributors. But it really is an extraordinary group of contributors, including marvelous people who I'm honored to have as guests on this program, and John McMurtry in the first half hour was one of them. Denny, I guess you're still not on. Oh, that's a shame. I'll find out after the program what happened to keep him from getting on. I suspect what did happen was he mistook the time. He thought we were scheduled for 1 o'clock, and I told him 1:30, but he was so used to coming on at 1 o'clock, it probably went under his radar, and he didn't realize it. I'll get him rescheduled. I feel very bad that I didn't get him on. His line is still busy. I'm getting a notification on. A shame. But John is a contributor to the book. He'll write an article on it. it'll be a very extraordinary article, because that's the kind of writing that John does. I've gotten several articles in already. James Petras, another one of my regulars, he's contributing at least two articles. Oh, I could go on and on. I really feel honored to have these people, to be associated with these people in the same volume. And I think of myself as a pygmy in the land of the giants, because these people really are giants. Great scholars, independent thinkers, honest analysts, rare commodities, the kind of people that I'm honored not just to call my contributors, but my friends. My friends. And again, I'm just a retired small business guy who started late in life, never intended to get involved in writing, in media hosting, to getting regular interviews. Had one this morning, had two yesterday, a couple of times I've even had three in one day. Never went beyond three, but I get asked all the time, and I never turn anybody down. If somebody wants me to come on, as long as it's a topic I know something about, I always do it. I prefer the topics that are most important. I've had many interviews on Ukraine. I've had many on issues of war and peace, Syria, Iran-related issues, police state harshness in America. Cynthia McKinney is also one of my contributors. She wrote a book. She edited a book on Libya, and she had me as one of her contributors. I'll contribute chapters to my own book. I guess as the editor, I can do anything I want. But I want the giants to be featured, not the pygmy. But I have a lot to say. Since the middle of February, about a month now, I've literally been writing daily articles on Ukraine. I have a great deal to say, and I intend to say it. Not as much as I'd like to say, but I'll write a couple of chapters or so. And again, the content will be independent. It'll be scrupulously truthful. The title again, Flashpoint in Ukraine, U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III. Probably the book is scheduled for publishing around mid-year. I have to get content into my editor on the 1st of May. They need to do all the things that editors need to do. My editor will do her due diligence. Then it goes for typesetting, for printing, for distribution, and then it'll get out into bookstores, available on Amazon. It'll be available for anybody to get, and I'll certainly remind my listeners of it and cue them when the book will be available. Again, Ukraine isn't just a story of Ukraine. It's the major geopolitical issue of our time. It's the gravest geopolitical crisis since World War II. There's no exaggeration about that. And the coup against a democratically elected government was the most brazen one since Mussolini's 1922 March on Rome in Europe. There have been plenty of brazen ones in other parts of the world. I'm certainly not an expert on them. My God, I mean, there was a brazen one against the Egyptian government last July. I wrote plenty about that, and I will again. But it's a very, very dangerous situation. So the Ukraine story is a story of potential global war. That's why it needs to be monitored. That's why people need to follow it. That's why people need to act in their own defense to charge out against governments, my own government, other Western governments that literally are heading the world for another potential global conflict. They're going to do it, maybe, unless good people stop them. Ordinary people have the power, and I say to them, use it. Use it responsibly. Use it nonviolently. Resisting tyranny is a universal right, and I try to do it every day in my writing, in my media work. I'm getting old. I don't have to worry about surviving much longer. Young people do. If they don't get in the struggle for their own self-defense, nobody's going to do it for them. We're just about out of time. Follow the Ukraine story. Follow the Venezuelan story. I don't expect regime change in Venezuela. We saw it in Ukraine. I don't expect it in Venezuela. I think Venezuelans will rise up against tyranny. They did it against a coup in 2002, April, lasted 2 days, and the power of the people thwarted it and brought Hugo Chavez back almost literally from the dead. I don't think they'll tolerate a coup against the government they support, and I certainly hope it turns out that way. Join us next week. We'll be back on Sunday. And I would just say, once PRN gets a schedule arranged, programs are being shifted around, new time slots, new programs added, and so on. Once everything gets squared away, I'll be able to pre-record two other programs. They'll be in my archives. Listeners will be able to access them. I'll cue you when that takes place, so everybody will be able to access the full array of what I'd like to present.